I rely on my parents for everything. They have to plan their entire lives around me. I feel so guilty about what I've done to my family. I do think about how much better off they would be without me. The words of a young woman who spent her teenage years battling mental illness and taking adult doses of antidepressants. But after the intervention of one of Ireland's leading psychiatrists, things have taken a turn for the better. Ruth O'Doherty is with me in studio, alongside former chief psychiatrist for the Eastern Health Board and retired professor of psychiatry at UCD, Ivor Brown. Good morning to you both.
Hello.
Now, let's start with you, Ruth. The difficulties you had as a child, they seem to come to a head when you were faced with the 11 plus in Northern Ireland.
Yeah. From the 11 plus, everything spiraled. I just went completely downhill because it just determined everything from like what school you went to.
Now, the 11 plus is an exam that you do in at the end of your primary school education,
yeah,
and you're going on to secondary school, comprehensive or grammar school or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually graded you on your performance,
mm-hmm,
as to your choice of school.
Yeah. So the 11 plus is split up over 2 days. So based on 2 days in an exam, the next few years of your life is decided.
Yeah. Now, you, it turned out, much later on, suffer from a thing called dyscalculia.
Yeah.
Which means that mathematics is a bit of a mystery.
It's impossible, yeah.
Okay. So that meant that you were never going to perform very well.
No.
Since that condition was undiagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with your result?
I got a D.
A D?
Yeah. So, basically just a complete failure.
The implication of that, though, you knew what school you'd like to go to, the one that your pals were going to,
mm-hmm,
go to. What happened to you?
Well, you don't get a choice. I got into my last choice of school, and I was completely separated from everyone that I'd ever known in primary school, all my friends. And I was so embarrassed that I got a D that I personally isolated myself completely, and I didn't want to be around anyone.
So they'd have play dates and sleepovers, but you were so embarrassed about I'm putting this in quotes, your so-called stupidity.
Yeah, I was so embarrassed because everyone that I was friends with, they got A's, they were all going to the same school, and I was so embarrassed. I was just so embarrassed, and I felt like if they were inviting me to stuff, it was, we'll invite Ruth, and it's like, out of pity. I was mortified.
How did you get on in the new school, the one with which you had no contact before?
I didn't get on well there at all. It became very evident very quickly that I was not going to fit in there at all. They were just very different to me.
You were posh girl.
I was the posh girl, yeah. But they all sort of grew up together. They'd all gone to the same school. They all came from the same area. I was having to travel 16 miles every day to get to school. I didn't know any of them. I had no history with them. They made life extremely difficult for me.
Now, you began at one point to self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
At what point was that? How old were you?
I was 12 or 13, and I don't know how I knew about it. I just started to do it, and it just made everything feel better,
yeah,
temporarily.
So the whole idea was that you were despising yourself, and this was some way of doing that physically, showing your...
Well, it felt like everything was my fault anyway. How could I have blamed anyone else? It was me that failed the 11 plus. It was me,
yeah,
that wasn't making friends in the school. I had to take it out on myself.
Did your parents know anything about any of this?
They knew that I was not getting on in school. They knew I was really down. Any time that they did ask me how I was feeling, most of the time I would have lied and said, well, I'm okay, or I'm coping, but I wasn't. But
were you bullied?
Yeah. I really, really suffered in that school. And it was horrible. It was horrible, and I couldn't understand why.
At what point did you have your first medical intervention?
I started going to see a psychologist. I have arthritis in my back, and then the physiotherapist that I was seeing at the time, they noticed that I had quite a disturbing view on myself and my life, and the worse that I sort of felt about myself, the worse my back got. So they said to my parents about maybe going and talking to someone.
So that was quite perceptive of the physiotherapist.
Yeah.
The physio was worried about you.
Yeah, I think I was just saying a lot of quite negative things about myself and my life, and at such a young age as well. So I started seeing a psychologist there, and she was a trainee, and she wasn't great.
So sometimes, was this on the NHS or was it privately?
Because no, NHS.
Sometimes the joys of the NHS are touted very large in this jurisdiction, but all may not be as it seems. When did you start then on medication, on antidepressant medication?
I think that was after I tried to kill myself. I think that was around that time, if not a wee bit before. They put me on like a medicine of it, and it was horrible. And at this point, whenever they even mentioned antidepressants, I was so desperate for anything. I would have done anything to feel anything different. 12 or 13.
So that began this medication path that you went down. Mm. And they obviously increased the power of the medication from time to time. Did it make you feel better at all?
No. And it really makes you think that, because all the doctors are telling you this will help and we'll just increase it a bit more, and you're so desperate for anything that you will not even question the increase that they're giving you because you just want anything.
And did you change medications from time to time?
Yeah, I did. And it's not just as simple as you're on this one for a certain amount of time and then they move you over to another. You've got to be weaned off one and then start on another.
Because they're powerful drugs.
Yeah, they're extremely powerful, and you don't...
These were mainly antidepressants.
Antidepressants and then antipsychotics.
Had anyone attempted to do any other kind of therapy with you? Talking therapy of any kind?
There was talking therapy, but most of the time, and it's only on reflection now with talking therapy, and with the amount of years that I've done it, I look back now and see that I was talking and I'm talking about problems and how I'm feeling, and you're not given any real sort of solutions. You're sitting there and you've just got someone that is almost agreeing with you and going, yeah, that is horrible, that's terrible, but they're not providing you with anything.
How did your education finish up? How many times did you have to change school, and did you ever find a safe place?
I changed school about 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
School was just extremely difficult, and I was constantly out of school, going to appointments to talk. Medication was always being increased. That messed up my concentration. The fact that I had undiagnosed dyscalculia, everything just...
There was one point, though, when you did find a bunch of friends with whom you thought discovered kind of companionship and just the normal school things that people have and do.
Yeah, I was 14 whenever I first felt like I've got friends, I'm accepted, and that was after I left the secondary school. This was in the new one, and became friends with a group of people. Finally felt accepted. There was an older fella there that was kind of the ringleader. He took an interest. I was 14, he was 18, and he my parents would say that he groomed me.
Okay. They took you out of harm's way, though.
They did, but at the time, I found devastating. Even though I was so broken.
These were the first friends you'd ever had,
and
suddenly you're removed from even them.
Yeah, so I felt like I would go back to just being nothing and having no one, and anything was better than just facing being alone.
How did you come in contact with Ivor Brown?
Because I remember one night just getting so annoyed at the fact that I was flipping through a magazine and they were talking about, isn't hay fever awful or something like that? And it was like, no, what you need to be talking about is depression and people that are suffering, and why is no one talking about this whenever so many people are going through it and it's so common, and why are people just not saying how it is? And I wrote an email to the editor of the health supplement in the Irish Times, because it was just the paper that I was looking at. And a few weeks later, they got back to me, said they'd wanted to do an interview, which they did. That came out. And then later on that day, Ivor...
That was 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2010, so I was 19. Ivor got in touch with them.
Yeah, well, I was just appalled at the idea of a young person stuck on these drugs. And, of course, such a contradiction. They're talking about talk therapy. How can you do therapy when you're chemically
when you're
like
zonked.
A zombie, you know?
Yeah.
So I got in touch with the health supplement. I had no idea who this was or where she was, to say that if she was interested, I'd be happy to see her, little knowing that she was way up in Belfast.
So how did you come to Dublin, or did Ivor?
I went to Dublin. I went there and I decided I would give up all the other sort of talking therapies, and they had put me in a self-harm group in Belfast. They had always told me that I needed psychotherapy, but refused to give me it until I had completed, you know, 6 weeks in self-harm group. They refused point blank.
I know your reflections on the self-harm group is that you were pretty miserable yourself, and you had a history of doing yourself some harm, but you didn't want to go along and listen to everyone else talking about their own misery.
No,
that wasn't
going
to be helpful.
God, you went in there and you're already feeling depressed, but gee, you would come out of there and everything was 10 times worse. So
what happened the day you came down to me?
Well, the first day I walked in to Ivor's place, I walked in the door and he was the one that got in contact with me. I walk in. Who the hell are you? How'd you get in here? Friendly as ever.
And that was the beginning, though, of a therapy that did work. Now, what was your prescription? And I mean that in the broadest sense, not in the medical sense.
What I generally work at is to try and, you have to do it very slowly, to gradually pare down these antidepressants, because you can't really achieve anything else until you...
So you've got to wean the patient off the antidepressants.
Yeah, and at the same time try and bring up the emotional problems. So it's a kind of titration, you know, that you're gradually reducing, and because you can't do any real emotional work while a person's on these things.
Now let's make sure that people who are on, for example, antipsychotics, who badly need them, they shouldn't sort of do this listening to us now. This is not something.
No, I'm not anti-drug in that sense. I think there's definitely a place for some antipsychotics, but I don't see much place for the antidepressant, to be quite honest. I think they're doing more damage than good.
Okay. The worry people would have, if they go off their meds, that they might become so depressed that they might do themselves some harm. What do you say to that person listening?
Well, you see, I think that's the point. You can't discontinue these medications unless you do the emotional work that's leading to all this, all the stories she's been talking about.
Yeah.
So generally, that isn't usually done. Of course, a person, if you just discontinue medication and you haven't worked on the whole trauma of that life throws up, then the person will relapse. But if you work at both, then you slowly, and it takes time. I don't know how long it was.
It took me nearly 2 years to come off them fully.
2 years before you got rid of all of that stuff from your system.
Yeah.
How did you feel in yourself about, you know, the way you were seeing the world after you came off the meds?
I felt a mixture of relief and devastation. Devastation because I realised that I had spent all my teenage years in a haze that I didn't know.
What did I say to you about getting off the...
Well, you told me that if I didn't come off them, then you wouldn't help me. So that was on the first meeting. I had been on tablets for years. I met Ivor whenever I was 19. I relied so heavily on them. But whenever I was coming off them, after a few months, I felt so clear in my head, and it was amazing to finally feel like the thoughts which I'm having, they're my own, and it's not... I spent so long going, am I thinking this because I'm depressed? Am I thinking this because it's a tablet making me think that? Am I thinking that because I'm a teenager? Or you don't know what thoughts are your own. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I had control over myself and my body.
What has been the impact of this clarity now? I mean, do you still have bouts of depression, Or have you managed?
You know, every day you don't know how you're going to wake up feeling in the morning. Like, you don't know. And there's no point in me coming on and saying everything's brilliant all the time and I feel great all the time. No, but for the first time, I know that I had resigned myself to a life on drugs, and I know for a fact that if I was still on them, I would either be dead or in a hospital. And now it's, yeah, life can be tough, and life is tough for everyone. I'm completely appreciative of that, but it's just very difficult at times. But I now know that I don't want to kill myself. And I never thought that I would feel that. I never thought that I would be optimistic about life and that I would see good in anything.
Your parents, how are they with you now? Are they thrilled?
Yeah. I know obviously that they worry. My parents, my brother and sister, of course they worry. I'm the baby of the family as well. But they are so supportive, and I know at times throughout the years, whenever things have gone, you know, been very dark, they've almost encouraged me to think about going back on tablets, because they're so desperate for something. But I've always been saying no, because you never hear, well, personally for me, I've never heard of a doctor putting someone on antidepressants and then saying a few months later, you're well enough to come back off them. I've never heard of that. I think taking control of it yourself, and, you know, tablets, for me, it felt like they were just pacifying symptoms.
Yeah.
We had to do a lot of work with the family, you know, for her to gradually move out, which is always a big struggle. Mm. And generally, I just try to have the point of view that to get each person to take responsibility for themselves. But what happens with someone like Ruth is that she becomes the focus of the family. So everything revolves around that, which is itself makes everything difficult, you know.
Yeah. And the future, you're optimistic about the future. I mean, you know, you do not want to self-harm again, ever.
I don't want to. I don't want to self-harm. I don't want to kill myself. I want to live a good sort of life as well as I can. But at the same time, I really do take every day as it comes, and I suppose a lot of it is I have to try and forgive myself for at times being quite hard on myself. And
and you're very energetic and active.
Oh yeah, like, you know, now I love to be busy, I love to do stuff, and I love, you know, keeping active and all of that. But, you know, there are days where I don't want to get up, I don't want to do anything. But it's the thing which has just kind of helped me is knowing that I can always make the comparison of now and then, and the difference. You know, tablets were keeping me sick and making me feel ill, and now I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, your energy is just bouncing out of you. You know, it's great to sense it. Ivor, the general question, though, that arises from this experience is, you know, is this kind of help available for people? Because you suspect not that, you know, there'll be a half-hour consultation, there'll be a pill, there'll be constant medication, that there won't be the time, there won't be the personnel, there won't be the resource. Yeah, to help people like Ruth's been helped.
This is a major difficulty. But of course, if you don't really help anyone, people keep piling up, so you don't have any time.
Yeah.
You know. But it is a real difficulty. And the other tragedy in a way is that many psychiatrists don't really get any training in psychotherapy, so that they're very dependent on giving medications.
So what's to be done?
I think you know, this really suggests we need a radical retraining and repositioning of the whole psychiatric profession. That's the way I see it. I mean, there are many, many therapists now who are not medical. And of course, this has tended to sort of drive psychiatrists and these non-medical practitioners apart. So, whereas in fact, We should all be working together.
Well, again, we have to stress to people, you know, do consult with your physician, be it a GP or your psychiatrist, if that's who you're involved with, before you do anything.
Yeah, and you certainly don't. I mean, people often make that mistake. They say, oh, I hate this medication. They stop it suddenly. Mm. And of course, it doesn't work. They relapse.
Yeah.
You really do have to work hard at it, and you have to work with the emotional problems and the traumas, like all that you've been...
What does the future hold? I mean, it's a stupid question because who knows, but I mean, what are your ambitions for yourself?
I know that whatever I want, well, what I kind of know that I want to do is talk about the only thing which I do know, and that is mental illness. And
I think you told me you'd like to write.
I'd like to write. You know, I just think people need to know that there's other things out there except tablets, and
there is another way.
Yeah, and just,
and the clarity of mind that you have now is worth it.
Well, she's living in her own flat now. She's working a full job.
I'm just doing the things which I never thought I'd be able to do. And again, it's not saying everything's brilliant all the time at all, but I'm somewhere where I never thought I would be. And
life is a struggle. This is a common denominator for all
for
of
everybody.
Us.
All right. Well, Ruth, thank you very much for joining us in
thank
studio.
You.
And Ivor Brown, thank you very much.
Thank you.